This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. 7:07 a.m. Wednesday, the 12th of August. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking about the new Malaysian government's stance on the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, otherwise known as the CPTPP. But before that, we're taking a look at the markets.
Yeah, so the US markets, the Dow down about 0.4%, and Nasdaq plunged 1.7%, S&P 500 down 0.8%. I think the markets were at record high before correcting the last hour of trading. I think as optimism over a stimulus package by President Donald Trump had receded. Also, I think, you know, the big news is, of course, the new, not new vice president, but, you know, Biden's pick for vice president is Kamala Harris.
Yeah, and if we take a look at Asian markets yesterday, they closed a mixed. Japan was up 1.9%. Hong Kong was up 2.1%. Korea was up 1.4%. China was down 1.2%, and even closer to home, Singapore was down 0.5%, and the FBM KLCI was down 0.4% yesterday.
So for some insights into global markets this morning, we are speaking with Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff. Now, last night, gold had its biggest decline in 7 years while bond yields jumped. Is the recent euphoria for this precious metal over, and are prices going to be staying below the $1,900 mark for the moment?
Good morning. In a nutshell, I don't believe that the rally in gold is over. This is a corrective. I've been looking for a correction in gold for the last few days, and for once, one of my predictions came out perfectly correct, so to speak. The underlying drivers of gold's rally, which is real negative real interest rates across the U.S. yield curve and a falling dollar, are still there. The markets in general are looking across a whole gamut of financial markets, like they're ready to have a bit of a pullback. But the underlying themes that are driving the gold rally, the stock market rally, et cetera, still remain intact. This is more of a bump in the road.
US CPI numbers are to be released today. Is that something you'll be really paying attention to this time around, as investors are really obsessing about yields and this negative interest rates?
Yeah, well, the PPI, I think, came out higher than expected yesterday, so that will add some more interest to it. I think what's pushing up the yields at the moment is that some crowd-pleaser-sized bond issues going on from the US Treasury, particularly in the 10-year bond. So what's been forgotten here over the last few months is the sheer amount of debt that the US government will be taking on board to fund its way through the pandemic. And that supply is now starting to hit the market, and we're going to see yields in the short term remain under pressure. But this is probably the timing's not good, because markets are obviously at all-time highs across the gamut, and then it doesn't take a lot just to make the fast money run for the exit. So I would expect the sort of negative sentiment to persist this week, but probably reverse early next week.
Let's take a look closer to home here, Jeff. Singapore's second quarter GDP contracted by 43% compared to the previous quarter. How do you expect the economy to perform this quarter?
Yeah, I think it's important to realise that GDP print was across the height of the circuit breaker lockdowns, and we're definitely going to see a substantial improvement in the Singapore Q3 GDP. But we won't be getting back to anything like normal levels, but I would expect GDP probably still to be sort of around the 10 to 15% lower year on year basis. As far as Singapore goes, it really needs to see a concerted recovery in the wider global economy, because it's a very open trading-based country, and so it always is one of the first to go into recessions, but it's usually one of the first to go out. The earliest I can really see growth returning in Singapore is late Q4, and a lot of that will be dependent on how the rest of the world manages to get COVID-19 under control.
And Jeff, if we look at Australia as well, blue chip Australian companies like Telstra and CBA released results this week in what is expected to be the worst earnings season on record. What do you think the numbers will say about the hit to corporates in Australia from the pandemic?
Well, CBA's come out this morning, and it's fallen by around, I think, 11% off the top of my head. Most of that was due to higher provisioning because of likely bad debts due to the COVID-19 slowdown. But actually, overall, the result was better than what analysts had been predicting, even though it wasn't a great result. The dividend has been cut because the government has said that banks can only pay out 50% of their profits in dividends. But overall, it still shows that their underlying business is quite solid. Telstra, I think, is expected to fall by around about 20%, but it would not surprise me in the least if it actually outperformed that total. With so many Australians working from home, I think the demand for telecommunications and data services, if anything, has risen. And that is higher margin business on the retail side rather than the corporate side. So I actually expect that Telstra will continue to outperform that number. The fall won't be as bad as expected. So I think what it's showing is that the big companies in Australia, although their profits will fall, that there is still ample evidence there that their underlying core earnings is still a very solid business.
A few companies are pursuing dividend cuts simply to conserve cash, I guess. Are there any bright spots in Australia?
I think the problem for Australia is that that banks have a huge weighting in the main indices in Australia, and they've been told to halve their dividends to preserve cash, which I think is something that is being repeated around the world and to me is actually eminently sensible and conservative. I would expect that the mining companies are going to do quite well in the Q3 and into Q4, simply on the back of increased demand from China. We can see that very clearly. China's been recovering and they have been buying a lot of primary products that Australia dig out of the ground and put on boats and send there. So I would expect that the mining sector will be one bright spot for Australia in the coming quarters.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Jeff. That was Jeffrey Halley of Owanda giving us a bit of insight into global markets and talking a bit at the end about Australia there. So for him, the mining sector looks to be a potential bright spot. But also, I mean, he mentioned the banks and the fact that they have such a heavy weighting on the main index. The CBA, of course, is the Commonwealth Bank of Australia, which at the end of the day, Jeff believes is still nevertheless got some solid foundations.
Speaking of banks, but not really a bank, let's talk about SoftBank. Masayoshi Ishisan has pledged that SoftBank Group will remain in, quotes, crisis mode, even as it swings to a profit and posted a $12 billion quarterly profit after reporting historic losses of $13 billion in its last fiscal year. And this recovery is largely due to rising valuation of SoftBank's Vision Fund bets like Uber and Slack. This is, of course, on the back of the blockbuster quarter we've seen in stocks, especially the tech stocks in the last few months. This is interesting, and it reminds me a bit of Berkshire Hathaway as well, right? Because they were largely buoyed by the fact that Apple stock had increased significantly. I think $27 billion on their own books, and they reported a profit of $26 billion, if I am correct.
Yeah, I think the value of Apple is like something like 40% of Berkshire Hathaway's
portfolio value. Yeah, it's a significant amount.
Yeah, so anyway, SoftBank Vision Fund, they've benefited from strong IPOs in the US market too. It's $300 million investment in oncology drug developer Relay. It's now worth more than $1 billion following its July listing. And of its 86 investments, I think the value of 29 of its holdings has risen, while 48 others have been marked down. So I think what this net-net on a net-net basis has resulted in a cumulative gross gain of $2 billion since the Vision Fund was launched in May 2017.
Yeah, but long gone are the days that when we talked about WeWork every time we talked about SoftBank, right? Like this time last year, wasn't WeWork the eye of the of Masayoshi's, what's the phrase I'm looking for here? It's basically the crown jewel in their
the
arsenal.
Blue-eyed
boy. I don't know what I'm...
Poster boy.
But basically, it was the crown jewel in there at that point. And now it's something we don't even talk about.
But you know how you mentioned Apple stock buoyed Berkshire Hathaway, right, Roshan? There's another different kind of Apple stock. So Apple Daily over in Hong Kong has seen its stock rise, I think it's fourfold, a day after the arrest of its owner, Jimmy Lai. So it appears that Hong Kongers have rallied behind the newspaper, so they've bought stock in the company. It closed on Tuesday at $1.00 and 10 cents, so that's Hong Kong dollars, from its close of 25.5 cents just 24 hours before that. So that's definitely going to be one to watch as we head into this new era, particularly for Hong Kong. But right now we have some messages for you, and then up next we're going to be speaking to Aidona Jan Ayub of the Khazanah Research Institute on Malaysia and the CPTPP. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.